We move to the last case this morning, U.S. versus Clinton. Second. Second, I'm sorry. Reisner. No, it's the fifth case, right?
Hey, please, the court. I'm Jay Stevens representing Kevin Reisner. And this is a case where the trial court found on a motion to suppress an implied consent. And my position is that the record does not support a finding of implied consent and that the court clearly erred in making such a finding. There was some dispute about the facts in this case, but at this point, nobody disagrees as to what the facts are. Mr. Reisner's girlfriend called 911 after an altercation with Mr. Reisner, but she hung up. She made no affirmative request of the police to respond other than placing the call and then hanging up before it was answered. The police responded in accordance with their policies, and when they responded, they came out and they talked to her, she gave them some information about the case. First, she told them she and Mr. Reisner had had an altercation. Second, she told them that he had threatened her with a knife. Thirdly, they observed some red marks on her neck that were consistent with
choking,
or could be consistent with other injuries as well, but certainly were consistent with choking. She told them that there were guns in the house, and she told them that normally when the police came, he hid down in the crawl space. So obviously the police, as in fact they testified, had been out on several occasions. All of this was after the police arrived and began an investigation. And I think the important thing is there's nothing in the record to say that she volunteered any of this information or asked them to take any action. There's nothing in the record that shows any more than police questioning about an incident and saying, for instance, what happened. She described what happened. They're probably taking notes or at least taking mental notes at that point. Following learning that he was in the house and that there were some firearms in the house and that he was probably hiding in the crawl space, the police made their first entry into the house. They found Mr. Reisner in the basement or crawl space. They took him into custody. They took him out of the car. They removed him from the premises. They had, as Judge Miller found, no indication that there was anyone else in the house, no indication of any exigent circumstances. The only thing that happened at that point is Officer Doolin said, I'd like to continue my investigation. I'd like to take a statement from you. Let's go inside. And Ms. Dean acquiesced. There's nothing in the record that shows that she requested to go inside. There's nothing in the record that shows that she led into the house. There's nothing in the record to show that she opened the door, only that he took her inside to take a statement.
They went inside.
I'm sorry?
Not that he took her inside, but they both went inside.
They both went inside. The record is devoid of any explanation as to whether Officer Doolin led her inside or whether she led him inside. It's just not there.
She didn't complain about the entry, no matter how you look at it.
I'm sorry?
She did not complain about their going inside.
She did not say no. And I think this is the critical issue in this case, is this is sliding awfully far down the slippery slope toward mere acquiescence or mere refusal or mere lack of refusal without more is an implied consent. And I think
there was more if you take the totality of the circumstance. She asked him to remove the guns too, right?
Well, let's go back and look at the record on that. The record says that they went inside. He said she asked them to remove the gun. I don't believe the record says that she told them that while they were out in the yard. That doesn't seem to appear from the record. What does appear is that the evidence technician came into the room, was doing her work, and she said she asked us to remove the gun. But let's remember, during their investigation, they went to the gun cabinet, found what appeared to be a silencer, and Ms. Dean says, my God, he was going to kill me. It's certainly a reasonable inference that at that point she says, I want the guns out. Because let's remember, there was no allegation that he had attacked her with a gun. He had attacked her, she said, with a knife, and he had beaten her up. But there was no allegation at all that he was using a gun to threaten her. So clearly, from the evidence, there's a good inference that once she learned there was a silencer, she said, get those guns out of the house, he was going to kill me. That's a long way from being outside and saying, go inside and get the guns. And
this was on January 31st, and I keep reading that she was clothed in a trench coat or something like that.
It was cold outside. There's no question about that. Her testimony was she had
clothes on or just a trench coat?
I don't know that that appears from the record. It, certainly there's no indication that she ran out in her nightgown or anything. She did say that she testified that she had a coat in the barn and kept it out there. Obviously, a coat in the barn is going to be something that is intended to keep you warm. It's not going to be just a light jacket. That would be the reason for having it out in the barn, is because you're going out in the field. It's a work clothes. So there's no indication.
The reason I ask that question goes to this totality of circumstances, is the fact that it was cold out and would make sense to go inside. But
it certainly may have made sense to go inside. I don't think, though, that we can say that that gives rise to an implied consent, because she didn't say, I'm cold, and he said, well, then let's go inside. She didn't say, let's go inside.
You know, the Greeks have a great saying for that, which is obvious, it's better left unsaid. We're both standing out in the cold. We don't have to sit around describing it. When he says, I want to take a further statement, can we go in?
My position is that Judge Miller's finding as to each of these entrances into the house that there was implied consent is clearly erroneous. The second entry is obviously the more important one, because that's the one where they seize the evidence. And that involved the going inside because it's cold to take a statement. I understand that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Stevens. My name is John Machasek, and I represent the United States in this case. Judge Ruggiero Aldisert, who is one of the longest-sitting judges, Court of Appeals judges in the United States.
We call him Ruggie, too. It's a kind of an interesting fellow, yes.
Yes, Your Honor. I clerked for him for a couple of years.
Wasn't he a nice man? Isn't he a nice man?
He is. But one of the things that he mentions in his book, Winning on Appeal, and in he kind of pounded into us as clerks, was that the importance of the standard of review. And in this case, the standard of review, as you know, is clearly erroneous. And his book says that standard is the lens that the appellate issues are to be viewed through. And in this case, Judge Miller made a very good record in his opinion and order regarding the facts that are involved in this case. And it's our position, or the government's position, that the facts that the appellant does not reach the level of showing that Judge Miller's decision was clearly erroneous. And I will concede to Mr. Stevens that acquiescence alone does not rise to the level of implied consent. But here we have more than that. And Judge Miller mentioned that in his opinion towards the end on the last page. He says that she impliedly requested that these officers go inside the house. I think I would put it a little bit differently. She cooperated and assisted the officers with regard to what they were doing. The facts that I won't go through the facts again. I'm sure the court is familiar with the facts that Judge Miller relied upon. However, there were a couple that I do want to emphasize. The court asked whether there was some discussion as to whether or not there had been a mention of guns outside the house. Now, Mr. Stevens correctly said that she did not ask the officers to remove the guns when the officers were outside the house, but she did volunteer to the officers that there were guns inside the house. And so the officers, that was information that she provided to them. That goes beyond just detailing the incidents that happened to her, but also towards a level of cooperation or assistance. She was concerned about the guns being in the home. And Mr. Stevens said that she didn't volunteer anything to the officers, but she did, actually. She volunteered to the officers that the defendant would be hiding in the crawl space in the basement. And under the standard that this court set in the Wasella case, in which Judge Kaney was on the panel in that case, the objective reasonableness standard, what would a typical reasonable person have understood by the exchange between the officer and the person giving consent in this case? No one looking at this, and as the district court says, could not have interpreted her actions otherwise than that she wanted the officers to go inside and remove the defendant, that he posed a threat. The same rationale applies to the second entry. And I think, Judge Kaney, your question about the weather outside, I believe in the record, and I can't remember if this was from the trial or from the suppression hearing, Ms. Dean said that she had been thrown out of the house by the defendant, pushed out the house. She went and got the coat from the barn where it was kept outside. Judge Miller does mention that it was late January in northern Indiana, and that it was evening and it was cold outside. The officer did not asked Ms. Dean to go if they could go inside to take a statement, and that is clearly and was reasonable under the circumstances. The options were to take a statement outside in the dark or in the car, and Ms. Dean did not say no, but she cooperated once again, going beyond acquiescence. She went inside with the officer, and she continued to cooperate by giving a statement. And as she was sitting at the kitchen table giving that statement, the firearms were right next to her in a glass-fronted firearms cabinet. So there really was no search. It's just whether the officers had a right to be in that room taking a statement from her. And I think when viewed from the prism of clearly erroneous standard, both of the entries were impliedly consented to by Ms. Dean, and I ask the court affirm the judgment. And I'll waive the balance of my time. Unless any...
I have a question.
Yes, Your
Honor. Where is Rubio now? Is he California? Or is he...
Yes, Your Honor. He's still in Santa Barbara. Just celebrated his 90th birthday and his 45th year on the bench.
I was going to guess 91, but then...
it was his 90th. And he's had his chambers out there in Santa Barbara for a long time now.
We served together in the criminal law committee for 5 years.
Oh, yeah. He was a very crusty guy, ex-Marine. Unfortunately, we never got to go to the Virgin Islands because
he
had
the same beard as Mr. Stevens.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Stevens, how much time? Yeah, 3.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two cases I think that talk the most about implied consent in this circuit are the Walls case and the case that I believe Mr. Machesek mentioned, the Wasella case. In Walls, the police knocked on the door, and Ms. Walls opened the door, stepped back, allowed the police to enter, and then motioned them to the kitchen. Clearly, that's a consent to come into the house. It's clear consent. In the Wasella case, the wife was inside the apartment. She called 911. She said, "My husband's trying to kill me." She said, "Come get him." When they came, she allowed them into the house. The primary issue in that case was the extent of the consent of the search. And she told them where the gun was. She told them the facts of the case, and she sat there while they were searching. Clearly, she wanted him arrested and wanted the case investigated. Clear implied consent. Each of those cases involved someone who was inside the house who invited the officer into the house. That didn't happen in this case. Hilton case Judge Miller relied on was from the Fourth Circuit. The woman called the police. She said that there may be two children in the apartment, and he's got a gun. The trial court clearly she wanted the police in to investigate that situation. And what the court said there is when the tenant is barred from entering her apartment and calls the police for assistance, When the tenant experiences fear about a dangerous condition in her apartment and calls the police for assistance. When the tenant calls the police for assistance, stating she's barred from her apartment, experiencing fear about the presence of a gun, and describing precisely where the gun is located, it can be inferred that she is authorizing the police. Ms. Dean did not call the police for assistance. She did not ask the police for assistance.
Well, she did say she called the police.
She called 911 and hung up.
What other reason would she call 911?
Obviously, she changed her mind before she ever talked to a police. She never said, I want help. Their procedures made them go out and check on her.
That's in the event somebody had pulled her away from the phone and kept her from carrying out the conversation.
Well, she certainly never told the police that.
I know, but that's why the procedure is there. Mm-hmm.
That's why the procedures are. That's correct. There's nothing to indicate any more than a policeman saying, are there guns in the house, which they would normally ask on this kind of a call. She says, yes, there are guns in the house. Where would he normally be in the house? Normally he hides in the basement. There's nothing in the record to support anything more than answering police's questions. There's nothing to imply that she in any way was asking the police for assistance. And I think that's what makes this case different from Wall, this case different from Houghton.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we now move.